All right. So at this time, it's my pleasure to introduce our 10-minute speaker, Tiz T from Pasadena.
Hi, my name's Tiz. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Rena for asking my husband and I out here to speak, but this is not my favorite thing to do. Let me see, my sobriety date is 7/9/96. I'm not going to be able to explain all the things that have happened to me in 27 years of sobriety, so let me just start a little bit with what it was like, what happened, and hopefully I'll spend more time on what it's like now. Let's see, I came from a really nice family. I was the only problem in my family. I started acting out young, getting arrested for stupid little things. I think the first time I got arrested, I was like roller skating down the Strand in Hermosa. A guy came up on a bicycle and wanted to take my beer. I wasn't quite sure what he was doing, so I started to kick him with my roller skates, and he turned out to be a cop. So, you know, it was just a lot of little stupid stuff like that. In my life, I've been able to do some, you know, I thought I needed the perfect life. So I always had an idea that I knew what I needed. I always thought I needed to have a dog. I always wanted to be a nurse. And I wanted a Volkswagen bus because, you know, go camping and go to the beach. And, you know, I grew up with one. And I always wanted to live in Laguna Beach. Well, I ended up obtaining just about all those things. Never had a house in Laguna Beach, but I had a boyfriend who lived in Laguna Beach. I would travel down here there on Friday with my bottle of Jack Daniels and visit him. And it would be empty by Saturday afternoon. I say, I gotta go to the grocery store and get some more Jack. And he's like, wow, you finished that whole bottle? So he was just a little too nosy and a little too controlling for me. So that was the end of the Laguna Beach experiment. I did go to nursing school. I've had some accomplishments in my life before I got sober. I did go to nursing school, and I loved that career, and I just retired from it. I used to work in the operating room. Fast paced, always changing, very interesting. But in my drinking, there were a lot of times I was in a lot of trouble as a direct result of my drinking. In 1982, I had a felony drunk driving. They sent me to jail. They sent me to AA for a year. And my mouth gets a little dry. And I sat in those meetings, and they gave me a huge fine. And I was convinced that none of this was my fault, that it was unjust, all these things they wanted me to do. It was an accident. In an alcoholic blackout, I run a truck over the top of a sports car going down the 395. But don't you know it was an accident? I didn't mean for it to happen. I'm not a bad person. And that's how I would justify or rationalize or whatever they call it, any kind of bad behavior I did, especially if it caused other people injury. I ended up being a daily drinker. And there used to be a lot of fun in drinking. Until, you know, alcohol used to do something for me, till it started to do something to me. And I sat in a year of AA meetings, and I didn't hear anything about the hope, about the change, about the steps. I would sit in meetings and make fun of people, and he's stupid, and he's lazy and needs a job, and she has too many kids and should drink. And so I spent my whole year in AA so self-absorbed, I couldn't see any of the good things that were going on around me. I was 25 then. I got sober at 38. And at the end of my drinking, I would drink till this all day long. I still had a job, but I would drink all day long. I couldn't go more than 5 or 6 hours without a drink. I would start to shake and sweat. And I would stand in my shower in the morning to take my first drink of vodka because I was a big barfer. And it became a very messy deal for me. So I had to keep enough vodka down to stop the shakes and stop the vomiting so I could get to work. Because I was convinced if I had a job, I couldn't possibly be an alcoholic. And I would stand in that shower thinking, I wonder how you know if you're an alcoholic. I'd never met anybody else who drank in the shower in the morning. One morning I went to call in sick for work again, Just had the shakes, the sweats, and those flashes of light that start coming at you. And my phone didn't work. And I thought, if I don't go to work, if I just don't show up, they will fire me. And then I may have to do something about my drinking. So there's a song by Kris Kristofferson. It says, I put on my cleanest dirty shirt. Well, that was me. Laundry was a big chore if you're busy drinking. And so I turned a t-shirt that had some vomit on it inside out. I put a baseball cap on my head. And I marched myself into work with my big, bright red face still shaking and wanting to vomit. And a woman ran past me that had tried to befriend me. I tried many things. They list all the things in what chapter 3 is it that we read. I also tried taking up some hobbies, and one of the things I tried taking up was quilting, and I tried it with some women I work with, and then it got to be where I couldn't sew a straight line anymore, so they said, why don't you go see what your problem is and then come back. So I saw this woman in the hall, and she said, my God, you look like hell, and I said, I think I need to go to alcohol rehab. That was not my intention that day. It was my intention to lay on the floor or start throwing up or something so they would send me home. She shuffled me into my boss's office, and they shuffled me off to rehab. And while I was in rehab, a young man, H&I is a fabulous thing. We have a friend, she's like the queen of H&I, and she takes us on panels all the time. And you wonder if anybody's even listening or if it's ever coming through. But I'll tell you, when I was in rehab, a young man came from what's now our home group, 185, and he talked to us, and I thought, well, I've been to the other club drunk for meetings, and, you know, I've been out of town for meetings drunk, and so I went up to the 185, and I met the group of people that I got sober with up there, and they were a fabulous group of people. The first guy that gave me a hug, Wilbur, he's now deceased, but I'll never forget him. Kind of frightened because they knew a change was coming, but I would still sit in those meetings and wonder, am I really an alcoholic? I mean, I had a home, a dog, a job, a legal driver's license. And I couldn't really, people say, well, you know, take that book. I got that $25,000 big book you get from rehab. And they said, well, read your book at night, read your book at night. I could not focus. I could not see straight. I would try and read a paragraph. I had to repeat it. I couldn't absorb it. And what I did is I watched people. I couldn't sit through a meeting without fidgeting. And I was telling somebody today at the meeting, the woman who actually turned out to be my sponsor, I was sitting next to her in a meeting, and I used to always carry around a huge backpack full of, well, I used to pick my purses by how big a bottle I could put in them, but I had a backpack, and it was full of all kinds of junk. And she goes, what are you doing rifling through that, making all this noise? I have a headache. Do you have any Motrin or Aspirin or something? She goes, sit still and just inventory why you have a headache. I thought, oh my God, why did I sit next to this woman? And she turned out to be my sponsor, my second sponsor. My first sponsor, I picked for different reasons. I picked her because she was a nurse like me. She had a master's degree. I thought, well, she's got to be really smart and she'll be able to explain this stuff to me. She didn't go to many meetings, though, and I was okay not seeing her at many meetings. And when I took a year cake, she came back as a newcomer after 15 years, and she had just slowly slipped away from going to meetings through that year. Me and my husband afterwards tried to take her to meetings, but she was pretty out there. So I got this other woman named Sylvia Smith to sponsor me, and my, like I said, my sobriety day, 7/9/96, that is also my mother's belly button birthday. I said, yeah, my birthday, my AA birthday is my mom's birthday. She goes, good, it'll give you something to think about besides yourself. So that started my journey with her, and she sat with me and she took me through the book. And you know, in rehab they taught me to write about everything, and I was kind of sick of writing about everything. So she said, that's not the way, I'm going to sponsor you the way I was sponsored. I'm going to take you through the book. You don't write until we come to the fourth step. And you know, the first and second step I had trouble with, and you know, the third step you get into God kind of with a whip. So she said, well, look, if you're powerless over alcohol and your life is unmanageable, it simply means you can't drink and you can't stay sober. And if alcohol has more power than you do, you are used to living by something with more power than you. So why not find a power that restores you to sanity instead of destroys your life? And I thought, well, that's a thought. So my first higher power... My first higher power was the wind. And I thought, I'm just going to get in this old rattle trap car. I got sober in July. It was getting pretty hot. So I rolled down my window and I'd stick my head out the window and the wind make me feel cooler. I had no air conditioning in my house at the time. And that worked for me. And I told her about it and I thought she was going to laugh at me. And she said, good, because it says that God could and would if he were sought. And the power is in the seeking. It doesn't say he would if he was found. So you just need to keep seeking. And my higher power has changed a lot since then to something that I know as all-loving, all-powerful, and all-forgiving. She took me through the steps. I did my fourth. I did my fifth. I'm running out of time, so I can't get into too many specifics. But I do want to talk just a little bit about my amends because I think it's pertinent to what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the amends I owed was to an ex-boyfriend, and I met him in nursing school, and he was a professor of psychiatry, and I dated him for 8 years, and I wrecked a couple cars in that time and did a couple other things that I needed to make amends for, and I went to make amends to him, and he looked at me with the blankest look on his face, and he had practiced psychiatry for about 20 years. He retired early, and he said, my God, I've learned more about listening to you these last few minutes and watching you drink about alcoholism than I did my whole 20 years of practice at the county. And it's like a light bulb went on in my head that said, nobody knows the heart and mind of an alcoholic like another alcoholic, and shame on me if I don't tend to that. So we're here tonight to tend to that, I guess. I want to thank you for having us. I think my 10 minutes is up, and you can torture my husband after this.
All right, let's give Tiz another round of applause.